And thank you all for being here and not going camping this weekend. I think I kind of got duped because you asked me this a long time ago, and I didn't know which date it was, so that's cool. Lord, let my words be worthy, so I may be your spokesman. Amen. One thing Keith forgot to mention that I will also throw out there is I'm the guy who writes that free-range devotions article in the church newsletter every month. That's me. Well, when Keith asked me to prepare a sermon as part of this Folk Songs on the Faith series, I got kind of nervous. Not because I'd be standing up here now and you guys all be out there waiting for me to say something profound. No, it was because Keith said, just pick your favorite psalm and go with it. Problem is, I don't have one. I think I know why. You see, if you've been following along in this series, you might notice there's a common thread weaving between all the Psalms. The Psalms are descriptive, poetic, vivid forms of communication, audible communication, where the author is singing or praising or weeping or wondering or crying or worshiping out loud. Now, the irony about me talking about this form of communication is, I'm an only child. I was raised by a single introverted mother, became an engineer, and I just love the solitude of running long distances. Needless to say, personal communication is not my strong point. You can ask my wife for verification on that later. So it's no wonder I don't have a single favorite psalm. However, I am fascinated by sound. Always have been. My mother tells me, I always loved the toys that made the most noise. And for the past 17 years, that fascination has been my job. I'm a noise control engineer. I have to understand and analyze sound, how it works, how it moves, how to control it. I get to measure how loud things are. I design rooms so the music sounds awesome and the speech is clearly audible. I get to explain to architects that they need to build the walls this way, otherwise there'll be no privacy between those two rooms. I can explain why that train way off in the distance is actually louder at night than during the daytime. And when a woman walks into a county meeting with a Cuisinart full of rocks and says, "This is what the gravel pit's gonna sound like in our neighborhood," and then turns it on liquefy, I'm the one who gets to explain that she's exaggerating just a wee bit. So today, I'll be your guide, explain how descriptions of sound taken from several psalms help explain audible, personal communication, specifically how we were made to participate in that communication, how God speaks to us, and what happens when there is no communication. All right, let's start with the vital instrument used in this audible form of communication, the ear. Now, even if you're a talker, the ear is crucial to good communication. Let's face it, you're going to have to listen at some point. Unlike the mouth, which can only create a limited array of sounds, the ear can detect an enormous range of sounds. In fact, it's so sensitive that if it were a bathroom scale, it'd be able to measure the weight of a single human hair and a 30-story building. Why is it so sensitive? Well, consider that we're soaked in sound. From the first time we cry coming out of the womb until other people cry at our passing. There's lots of auditory information to be heard in between. And if you go back, I mean way back, in the beginning, God used sound to create. Psalm 33 says, "By the word of the Lord were the heavens made, for he spoke, and it came to be. He commanded, and it stood firm." Ever since God spoke the words, "Let there be light," and light appeared, sound has been an integral part of this world. And his creation has been returning the favor ever since. Psalm 19, David says, "The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day, they pour forth speech, and night after night, they display knowledge. Their voice goes out into all the earth. Their words to the ends of the world. And he made you to hear every last bit of it. From this, to this, to this, and to this. We are so constantly immersed in sound that when it's not there, we begin to feel uncomfortable. It seems kind of unnatural. And if that started to feel uncomfortable after about 30 seconds, how long do you think it would take before it became unbearable? I'm a noise engineer. I can answer that. The Guinness Book of World Records lists an anechoic chamber at Orfield Labs in Illinois as the quietest place on Earth. It's an isolation chamber. They use it as a recording studio. Now, Orfield has offered a case of beer to anyone who can last 45 minutes inside. Most people can't last 20. Little clarification. This sanctuary is quiet. Even when I'm not talking, you can hear little things like the air conditioning system, cooling fans on the projectors, you know, maybe people shuffling nearby. A place like the Orfield Chamber is complete silence, which according to Webster's means the absence or lack of sound or noise. It also means refusal, failure, or inability to speak. And lastly, a failure to notice or acknowledge something. Quiet is not silence. Silence is not faint sounds like birds chirping in the distance or the gurgle of a stream. True silence, I mean the total, unremitting, unrelenting lack of any sound whatsoever. That typically has negative connotations. For example, when someone is angry at someone else, they don't give them the quiet treatment. Or another example, on the 10th anniversary of September 11th, New York City Fire Department Battalion Chief Joseph Pfeiffer recalled the second tower collapsing this way. "Then I remember hearing another loud roar, and we started to run. This beautiful summer morning, bright sunshine, went totally black. You couldn't see the hand in front of your face. And then there was the eerie sound of silence. All the chatter on the radio went quiet. You heard nothing. We were made to hear, and silence is detrimental to communication for two reasons. First, when as a listener, we're expecting to hear something, but don't. Probably like you probably felt a few minutes ago when I stopped talking. And second, when as a talker we know we should be saying something, but don't. Kind of like when I had a crush on a girl in my typing class back in junior high. Michelle and I, we joked and we laughed, we'd steal glances at each other. I was a little distracted during class, which is probably why to this day I still can't keyboard correctly. Yet even though I spoke with her, I remained silent about the one thing that mattered, how I felt about her. And my silence had consequences. I was crushed when I found out she was dating some other guy. From our typing class, no less. I mean, I wanted to believe it was because he could actually keyboard correctly, but no. He had no problem talking to her on a deeper level, unlike me, who kept silent about such things. In hindsight, every important word that I failed to speak when I had the chance pressed down like stacked weights on my chest. I resemble David's remarks in Psalm 39. When I was silent and still, not even saying anything good, my anguish increased. And Psalm 32, when I kept silent, my bones wasted away through my groaning all day long. Our ears were made to hear, and when they're surrounded by silence, they go searching for something, anything to listen to. I've been in anechoic chambers, like the quietest place on earth, and I can tell you after about 5 minutes, your ears begin to itch. They literally feel like they're beginning to stretch out to find something to listen to. They're straining to work. And when they can't hear anything external, you can actually start to hear your blood pumping around inside of you. So by not saying anything of importance or meaningful to Michelle, in effect, I abandoned her ears and let them find someone else to listen to, who said something that she wanted or needed to hear. Now imagine God, who crafted you in his own image, his ears eagerly itching to listen, waiting to hear the one thing that matters, how you feel about him. And he hears nothing. Man, a broken teenage heart doesn't even come close to how he feels. Silence confuses. Silence hurts. And since God made the entire universe with the sound of his voice, it's probably safe to say silence is not what he intended. All right, let's shift gears a little bit here. Can you imagine a doctor delivering a diagnosis like this? I'm sorry, but you have cancer. Or how about trying to have a heart-to-heart conversation like this? I'm really concerned about where our relationship is going. I mean, if you think about it, meaningful, intimate, personal communication occurs quietly. So we need to be in a quiet environment to hear it. The Gospels describe Jesus as going to a quiet place, up on a mountainside, to pray and to listen to his Father. In Psalm 46, the Lord says, "Be still and know that I am God." But if we're not still, keep moving, surround ourselves with useless noise from the internet or TV or friends yakking about the hairstyle of somebody famous, God does have a big voice, and he can use it to cut through all that noise and get people's attention. In fact, thunder is the sound used most often to describe God's voice, especially in the Psalms. For example, there's Psalm 29. The God of glory thunders. The Lord thunders over the mighty waters. The voice of the Lord is powerful. The voice of the Lord is majestic. The voice of the Lord breaks the cedars. The Lord breaks in pieces the cedars of Lebanon. The voice of the Lord twists the oaks and strips the forests bare. That's loud. So just remember, no matter how loud your neighbor or you think that your kids are, I'd be willing to bet that there's still trees with leaves on them in your yard. But why use thunder to describe God's voice? Thunder gets your attention. It's an announcement that something powerful is approaching, and it puts us on alert. It issues warning, strikes fear, and inspires awe. Another aspect of thunder is that it carries over tremendous distances, miles and miles. You know, you see the flash of lightning, then what do? You start counting, 1,001, 1,002, 1,003. Well, when we're trying to communicate, as a listener moves further and further away, then the talker needs to try to shout to try to communicate. Same reason why God breaks out the thunder. Or, as my daughter put it, if someone's not standing next to God, of course he needs to talk really loud. One of my favorite scripture passages is in 1 Kings. Elijah's hiding in a cave. Then an angel appears. Tells him to be ready because the Lord is about to pass by. And then the excitement started. Wind so powerful, it tore apart mountains and shattered rock. An earthquake, rumbling. Fires raging. Can you tell I had fun putting this together? But the Lord was not in any of those, not one. They announced his approach, but there was no message specifically for Elijah. And then, after all those events, came, as the NIV describes it, a gentle whisper. Other translations describe it as a still, small voice. Then the text continues, when Elijah heard it, pulled his cloak over his face, went out and stood at the mouth of the cave. And then a voice said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? With a gentle whisper, God spoke personally and pointedly to Elijah. So a loud voice is used as a warning or to get someone's attention, but it usually doesn't convey personal information. And when God has something to say to us directly, personally, he speaks softly with that quiet voice, the one you need to be real close to him to even hear, because it's nothing more than a whisper. Which is why Psalm 73 says, it's good to be near God. What his quiet voice may lack in raw power compared to thunder, it more than makes up for in content. But even thunder becomes inaudible if we're far enough away. And if we are that far from God, in effect, we're telling him to be silent. And if that's the way we want it, eventually that's what he will grant us. One psalmist concluded, unless the Lord had given me help, I would have soon dwelt in the silence of death. Now, if people here on earth can't stand to be immersed in silence for more than 20 minutes, even with a case of beer at stake, what if that crushing silence stretched on for eternity? We were made for audible communication. As I mentioned at the start, I've obviously got some work to do to improve my own interpersonal communication skills. Don't let me standing up here delivering a sermon fool you. But I found that the Psalms are a blueprint for communication the way God intended. Blueprint first for interpersonal communication, and second for communication with God. What does that blueprint say? Well, you got two ears, use them. Our ears are sensitive to a huge range of sound, and they are thirsty for something to hear. What are we giving other people to listen to? What are we giving our own ears to listen to? Dirty jokes? Juicy gossip? Bad-mouthing someone else? If we're verbalizing stuff like that, then what are we giving God to listen to? The psalmist understood that God is always listening. So they sang what was on their hearts. Second, don't stay silent. It's confusing when we're expecting someone to say something, but they don't. And it hurts us when we should say something, but we don't. For example, we had some neighbors a while back, always told us how great it would be to get together at their house, you know, a little party, but then repeatedly, we wouldn't get invited. We could hear the parties going on in their yard. In the spirit of neighborly peace, we let it go, never confronted them, never said anything about it to them. But it didn't bother them because they didn't know anything was wrong. But when we saw them, oh man, we'd get tense. Do yourself a favor and speak up so that you can set yourself free from all that pent-up anger and frustration. If nothing else, The Psalms are about voicing the author's emotions. They're venting to God. They're praising Him. They're asking questions, whatever. And it's an example that we should follow. Next, thunder is necessary to get someone's attention or as a warning. You know, coming out of college, I had an interview, my only interview. And I had to drive several hours to get there. I was desperately convinced that I needed this job. Instead, my car broke down not once, but twice on the way there. Sounded like a thunderous no to me. If I had gotten that job, I think it's safe to say I probably wouldn't be here. God had other ideas, and He needed to get my attention. So how are people trying to get our attention? How is God trying to get our attention? And then lastly, verbalize the one thing that matters. This has been my biggest challenge since way back in typing class. And now I'm pretty sure if you ask people what I talk about, it would be acoustics and running and college basketball. Not very deep. And not very good for the interpersonal communication that God intended for us. Because ultimately, that stuff doesn't matter. What's the one thing that we need to say to a child, spouse, parent, friend? Is it, I love you? Or, I'm sorry? Or, I need some help? Or, stop it. And what's the one thing we need to say to God? And when do we make that time to communicate with Him? My quiet time was when I'm off driving around the state for work. Got the cell phone, the radio, the iPod turned off. There is a lot of time free from distractions. But it doesn't have to be a car. You just need a time and a quiet place where we can speak our mind and listen for the response of His still, small voice. When I accepted Jesus 12 years ago, the one thing I said was, thank you. I've been saying it ever since. When was the last time you spoke to Him? And what do you need to say to Him? I'll leave you with that. Thanks again for being here, and hopefully I've given your ears something worthy to listen to. Thanks.